Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Juan Castillo, and this is the Electric Drum. Now, today, I have someone here who is doing some great things in our community. As a matter of fact, you know, he's with Chevrolet of Milford. He's the general manager. Oscar's with us. Oscar, what's your last name?
Guerra.
Yeah, just get that up.
Guerra, yes.
Sir. Oscar Guerra, you know, who's actually, you know, helping us with the Beat the Odds Scholarship, which is a program that we're doing here at the station to identify a young person who's overcome obstacles in their lives and is ready to go to college now and needs some help. And we got $4,500 that we're going to give to a lucky and deserving student in our community at our back-to-school event that we're doing on August. But I want to talk to Oscar about his life, you know, because not only are we appreciative of what he's doing here with this program, but also I think he could inspire, you know, the folks here in our community. So, Oscar, tell us, where were you born? Talk about those early years. Get that mic up so we can
get
you.
Well, listen, I was born in Havana, Cuba.
Yes.
In 1961. Fortunate to be able to migrate here to the United States at the age of 10 with my family, my mother, father, and there were four of us, four brothers and sisters. So we were all fortunate to be able to come here, and we landed in the Bronx initially.
Now, did you know English at that point?
No.
So you came in just speaking Spanish.
First time I ever traveled outside of Cuba, first time I ever got on a plane.
Right.
First time I ever held a helium balloon in my hand.
Yes.
First time I chewed a piece of chewing gum.
Wow. Wow.
So, yeah, it was quite an impression. And to arrive in New York, it was just super emotional.
So a little culture shock, too. I mean.
Totally.
I mean, the different foods and the whole nine, right?
I guess being young, it's exciting. Everything that you took in was exciting. But I can tell you, as an example, my mother did suffer from emotional stresses because of the culture shock.
Right.
It's huge. When you can walk into a supermarket, I'd imagine, say, a Walmart, and you see the array of selection and choices that you have and doesn't exist in a country like ours, it's shocking.
Right. So let's talk about your transition. So you go to school, you got to learn English.
Yeah.
Right? You know,
yeah.
So how quickly did you adapt? Talk to me about that.
It was pretty quick. You know, in the school, they paired me up with a young man who I never forget. His name was Oswaldo.
Yes.
And he was of Puerto Rican descent. And so they paired him with me to walk me around and show me the ropes. And I got to tell you, probably within a short period of time, 2-3 months, I knew enough to at least communicate. And that was a fantastic experience.
Right. So you were growing up in the Bronx, right?
That's right.
But then you moved to Florida. Tell me about that trip.
We moved to Florida a few years later. My father got the opportunity to go to South Florida with a job offer. And being a good Cuban, most of them end up in Miami anyway, so that's where we wanted to be.
Yes.
And we went down to Florida. I went to high school for a short period of time in Fort Lauderdale, then went to Miami. Went to school in Miami for a couple of years until I graduated. Then I had the opportunity to go study. Well, my first love was architectural drafting. So
okay.
I went to a school in Tampa, Florida, to take up architectural drafting. And I did that for a semester or two. And then shortly after that, I couldn't get the funding that I needed to continue studying. So I had to kind of resign my dream.
Okay.
And go to work, and that's how I got my first job in the car business, actually.
So let's get started. So which was the first job? The one job that, you know, you didn't even think that you would be doing, you know, now, but that first job. Tell me about the first one.
the first job, you mean within my career, that kind of was exciting?
Yeah, to right. Well, and you know, as far as dealing with cars.
My first job was washing cars.
Washing cars.
I got a job. I got an opportunity to wash cars for a car rental outfit.
Okay.
I was still in Miami at the time. I was working for a car rental outfit in Miami Beach and washing cars. And when an opportunity came up, actually the owner of the car rental outfit needed a special errand run up to Fort Lauderdale, and it was a rush job. So he asked me if I would be interested in going up there. I said, yeah, of course. I went up, took the ride up to Fort Lauderdale, delivered what he needed to deliver, came back. He seen me back in the store a couple hours later and said, hey, aren't you the guy that we sent up to Fort Lauderdale? And I says, yeah. He said, what are you still doing here? I said, I'm back. And he was so shocked that I did the job and came back and was back at work
right.
that he promoted me.
So you got a promotion right away.
I got my first opportunity. to actually now interact, get out of washing cars and interact with customers. So now I got promoted to delivering the cars to people's homes and businesses and so forth. So that was my first job actually right. working behind, dealing directly with the customer.
Right, right. Yeah. So fast forward, you've been working there for a while. Tell us about your next move.
So fast forward, I actually got in the school where I was going to, when I went to Tampa to study, I got a job in a car rental outfit there, again, washing cars. It was already in my background. It's what I can do. So I got a job washing cars, stayed there for the year and a half that I was going to school. And when that opportunity didn't exist anymore, I moved down to Florida. I asked the outfit if they had a position for me in the Miami location, and they right. did. It happened to be an opportunity inside in the office, and I took that. So worked there behind the counter for a year or so, and they went to two or three managers. And finally I said to them, hey, I can do that job. Why do you guys keep hiring managers?
Now you're 21, 22.
I'm 20 years old.
You're 20 years old. Okay.
19, 20 years
old.
So
these guys, so you're like, hey, I can do this job.
I can do this job. Let me run this place. You went to two or three managers. Nobody seems to stick.
Yes.
Let me do this job. And they gave me the opportunity to do the job, and I did. So I ran a small rental operation with about 150 cars to my name, to my control, and six or seven employees. Most of them were my friends.
Right.
I have my cousin working with me. I had everybody that I could work with me. So that was a great experience also. I did that for about a year and a half. Then I chased a young lady from New York back up to New York and turned out to be the mother of my
okay.
children. So
all right.
I came
all
back
right.
to New York. We went to Long Island.
Okay, so she pulled you out
She pulled me out of the sunshine. Took me out of the beautiful state of Florida. And at 20 years old, I came to Long Island. Got a job still for a car rental agency at the time. It was I was living in the middle of Long Island and commuting about an hour to Kennedy Airport every day to work for National Car Rental at the time.
All right, National, yeah, yeah.
Big car rental office. So they gave me an opportunity to work for them as a manager also. So I had that job there for a few years. And then when that portion of my life was over and I said, well, you know, what am I going to do next? It doesn't seem like I can grow enough doing this.
Okay.
I'm kind of stuck. Now I'm married. I have a baby, and I have another on the way. I'm 23 years old, or 24 years old at the time. And I was like, okay, I need to find something else. My life isn't going anywhere doing this anymore. And I decided to leave that. And when I thought about and reflected on what I can do, I said, well, you know what? I like cars and I like people. So let me try selling cars. And sure enough, I was fortunate to find a couple of dealerships at the time that were looking for trainees, people where you can start and train in the
right.
dealership level. And I circled four or five different interviews and put on my suit and tie, walked into the first place, which is the closest to my house. It was 5 minutes away. It was a used car dealership. And the owner hired me on the spot. He saw me come in there with a suit and tie and came running out of his office.
Wow.
Come here, I want to talk to you.
That's amazing.
So it was a great experience. He gave me the interview on the spot, trained me, gave me the opportunity to train in the car business, and Fast forward, I think 40 years later.
40 years later. So now you ended up going back to Miami, right? Or you?
I've gone back to Miami in my career on several different occasions,
right,
just because ultimately that's where I thought I would end up.
Right.
But in my career, I found that it's harder.
Right.
More work, less pay, and just it didn't work out. So I pretty much stayed here.
So tell me about how did you get to Connecticut and Milford?
Okay, so that's interesting. So in my career, every opportunity that I got in any dealership where I was, if I had an opportunity to grow at some level, I always took that opportunity. So if I'm working as a desk manager, which is sort of an entry-level management job at a dealership, and an opportunity came up as a finance manager, I wanted that opportunity, and I went knocking on doors, and I said, how do I do that job? How do I get that spot?
Right.
Until I got it, and then another, and then another. And ultimately, I can safely say I've done every job in the car dealership except getting on the cars, which is tough to do. I'm not interested in doing as a mechanic.
Right.
It's a tough job. But every job in a car dealership that has to do with selling cars, I've done.
Now, let's talk about that a little bit. This is Juan Castillo. This is Electric Drum. I got my brother here, mi hermano here, Oscar. He's a general manager here.
Yes, sir.
Chevrolet.
Yes, sir.
You know, of Milford. And we've been talking about his life and, you know, and just, you know, coming up in the business. Sales, right?
Yep.
It's a tough field. However, right, the payoff is great. If you had to speak to a young person today, right, about doing sales, selling cars, selling anything, right?
Yep.
What advice would you give them?
Well, look, I do talk to young people every day, by the way.
Wonderful.
I'm constantly interviewing young people, and I love to bring people in without prior sales experience, because I think you don't really need sales experience per se. Selling to me is helping people make a decision. I mean, we have the cars. They're coming in here because they need a car.
Right.
They're not coming in here for a hamburger or a sofa. They're coming in here for an automobile. And all you really have to do is be people friendly.
Yes.
Show them around. Make it easy. Make the process easy. Show them how easy it is in the process. Help them. Guide them. And make it a friendly affair. And that's selling.
Right.
That's the definition to me. That's how I train my salespeople. You're really just here to help people make a decision.
Right.
That's
right.
So for me, it's a relatively easy job.
That's awesome, man. Now, you know, like you mentioned earlier, you know, this Juan Castillo, speaking of my man Oscar here, man, general manager here at Chevrolet of Milford. If you need a ride, you need to come down here. You know what I'm saying? Ask for Oscar, man. He's gonna hook you up. All right. So make sure you do that. But check it. English, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking to you. You told us earlier that you did not know a word of English when you came to this country, right?
Right.
You got a great handle of English language, my brother, you know, and obviously education did it for you, right? Can you talk to me about that and how, in fact, why you wanted to get involved with our WYBC Chevrolet of Milford Beat the Odds Scholarship Program?
Yeah, sure. Well, look, frankly, yes, education is key. I came here, as I said, at 10 years old. So I missed a lot of the basics, the foundation of what it is to use the English language. And that cost me a great deal in my entire career. So I always had to work harder, prepare better, spend more time studying and researching and making sure that I was using the right words, reading as much as possible.
Yes.
So you skip that in school. You know, I remember coming in, like I said, in 10 years old, in the fourth grade, not knowing a word of English, but I can get up in front of the blackboard and do long multiplication and long division.
Right.
Where the teachers were all grabbing.
Because the numbers are all the same.
Look at this guy.
Yeah, the numbers are all the same.
But at the age of 10, that was advanced, so I was always good at math.
Right.
But the English language was tough. It was tough. And it still, to me, continues to be a challenge, but it's something that I work on, and I still work on every day. And yes, education, it's the foundation.
And I know when we first approached you about this program, you know, one of the things that you had mentioned to us was that, you know, that your company is really about giving back. Can you talk to me about how important that is?
Yeah, sure. So, hey, like I said, I'm a young kid that came to this country from nothing, basically. And I'm telling you, a family of six that traveled here from another country with a half a suitcase of personal belongings. And that's all we had to our name. So I'm blessed, and I'm so grateful for what this country and really the people that I've been surrounded myself with all my life have given me the opportunity to do. I can only think of ways of how can I find ways of doing that in return to other people, especially to the young community, to young people out there. Like I said, I interview young men and women every day that have never done this kind of job, and it's my pleasure and really it's a great feeling for me to feel that they're getting something, they're getting an opportunity to move on.
And you had to leave college because of the fact that you couldn't afford it.
Totally.
Right? So here's an opportunity for you to give back and to give someone an opportunity to go.
This business has given me the opportunity to raise a family and live the kind of life that I wouldn't have dreamt of anywhere else, and that a lot of people would probably dream of living, to be honest with you. And yeah, it's an opportunity.
Well, I want to thank you for coming down and speaking to us. You got a beautiful facility here in Milford, and again, folks can come and see you.
It's
right?
It's my pleasure to get involved, and I really am thankful to you guys for giving me the opportunity.
Oh, for sure.
To get involved.
And so, what's the hot car right now? You got a Chevrolet. I know we were talking about electric cars.
Yeah,
let's talk about
that
a little bit.
I'm excited about the electric electric cars. A Chevrolet is matter of fact, this one right behind us is a Chevy Blazer, all electric, full electric EV. So Chevrolet is jumping on. We have three models coming out over the next couple of months that are full electric. But I'm very excited about it. It's new technology. I think it's very user-friendly. And it's I think at the end of the day, the consumer wins with the electric future that's coming out. So I'm really excited about
and,
it. But,
and Mother Earth wins.
And Mother Earth wins. You could debate that or whatever, but at the end of the day, for now, for me, you know, what's a good value for the consumer?
Yes,
I think ultimately the EV vehicle is a great option.
Right.
Our Chevy Equinox is the number one seller that we have here, and the Chevrolet Silverado. Those two are our number one volume.
Yeah, your Silverado, man, is like
historic. They've been
around
forever. They got a name. We do very well with them.
Yes. So. Well, listen, I want to thank you, man. I appreciate
thank you.
All right.
I appreciate you coming down.
There you
down.
Go.
Appreciate
absolutely. Juan Castillo with you. This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC. Stay with us. Coming up next, Jose Candelario with Tommy Davidson.
This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and right now I am joined by the famed actor, comedian, and singer, Tommy Davidson. Thank you for your time, Tommy.
Hey, man.
Go-go music, so big in your area. What's your favorite song, and what makes go-go music like so long-lasting?
My favorite song now is I Know by me. But I would say Drop the Bomb by Trouble Funk or Doing the Blood by EU. Or how about Slave to the Rhythm by Grace Jones, you know?
All good songs.
Yeah, all good songs.
And, you know, and I mean, it's a local vibe in the D.C. area. You travel all around the United States. What makes go-go music, you know, so good and you know, get them people moving?
I just think it's an inner city form of music like hip hop, and they both came from the same place in the city, you know, and I was there when hip hop was born, and I was there when go-go was born. And man, what a cycle to go through, you know. My song "I Know" has a go-go vibe to it. If you've heard it, so for the audience, Tommy Davidson "I Know" featuring Richard Elliott has that go-go vibe, but it's really sophisticated and smooth jazz at the same time. Mm. So I was able to do a hybrid. And I'm going to continue to do that because it's a part of who I am. You know?
There you go. You traveled, you're on tour again. You traveled all over the United States. You've been to Connecticut several times. What is your favorite thing about Connecticut?
Diversity. The diversity, not only of the people, but, you know, the place. You go from farmland to city to a hamlet. It's crazy. It seems like you're walking back in time in a way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, but you're not really, because you're right in the middle, smack dab in the middle of the old USA, boy. You got an Eastern Indian community, a Caribbean community, you know, gay and lesbian community. You got Caribe, you know, a lot of Latinos that are from Cuba or Puerto Rico or the Dominican Republic, you know, Central Americans, and a variation of Europeans, boy. So how can you do wrong there?
No, you've been doing comedy so long, and does it amaze you of how comedy and funny is so universal, and you have so many diverse fans?
It's a miracle, to tell you the truth. To go from catching the bus to work with my backpack on my shoulder to going and getting on stage in places all over the world, you couldn't have told me that that was possible unless you told me it was possible, which happened. People told me that it was possible.
Hmm. Growing up, who were your male role models growing up, and what kind of influence did they have on you?
My friends were my role models, some of the role models in my neighborhood. But basically, the Jackson 5 were the first ones to take me by the hand. And then I looked up to a lot of athletes in football and basketball. But mostly music. Mostly music. George Duke, Donald Byrd, Isaac Hayes, Peabo Bryson, Brenda Russell, George Howard, Earth, Wind & Fire, Grand Funk, Led Zeppelin, the Hair, the soundtrack for Hair, soundtrack for Jesus Christ Superstar, Carl Anderson, played Judas in that, Barry White, Confunction, the Carpenters, Dionne Warwick, Nancy Wilson, Mel Torme, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr. Should I go on, James Taylor?
You can go on for days.
Yeah, bad boy, boy.
I mean,
watch out for me.
In all ages, the streets is very alluring. What kept you off the streets? I know music kept you off the street, but was it not calling you, or because it's always available for inner city individuals?
It did keep me off the streets because I didn't know that my brother was keeping me off the streets by buying albums. So I'd stay in the house constantly and just study music, not study, but just listen and absorb it. But I did get caught up out there because I was trying to be something that I thought I was being. You know, I thought that was synonymous with being black. You know, I was doing negative stuff and engaged in some kind of crime or something. You know, and that's not the part at all. But it is. It is a reality that it takes on an identity for us, you know, but we're in a different social phase than the other groups of Americans that were able to shrug that thug mentality and being in gangs and being engaged in crime right after World War II. YMCA and the Boys Club and 4-H and Girls Club and, you know, they had Boys Town and, you know, all these things that they had for their youth to get them off the street. Remember the Bowery Boys and all that craziness?
Mm-hmm.
Or the Godfather, you know? So we haven't had that. We haven't been through that cycle yet because there's not a government program that's aimed at the African-American male homicide rate or incarceration rate. And even though it's an epic proportion, it's ignored by the government. So, you know, we've had to do it ourselves. And that's why I embraced this program called the OK program, former police officer in chief, now runs a foundation and a program for young African-American males and African-American cops. And it's called the OK program. OKprogram.net, I believe. And you can find it. Wow. So there is solutions out there. You know, one of the things, the tragedies that happened in the NFL was not the fact that the NFL gave a lot of money to different organizations, but the fact that they never gave him back his job. Because he wasn't wrong.
We're going to switch gears here. You're on tour again, fresh material. How hard is it to go out there and practice with so many cell phones out there?
I'm out of paying no attention, man. You know, I acclimate very fast to changing conditions. I'm very adaptable. I think that came from my own personal circumstance, being black and white at the same time.
What does your new material mostly consist of? Family, life experiences? Because it's you're a made man right now. So how do you remain relatable?
I'm by being relatable, and just talking about the simple things like dogs, like dogs or being on the bus or dancing or Telemundo, Spanish TV or just keeping it simple, taking all the things that we see every day and cracking them open and seeing how we can laugh about them.
Everyone's a comedian now. What is your advice to a young person trying to get on the scene? Because there's a lot of white noise, right? There's like a huge level that you have to break through to get to the other side.
It's the same. It just depends on what you're trying to do. If you want to be a internet star, you can pursue that. And but that has nothing to do with performing live. It has to do with being inside of a phone. So in order to get to the next level in comedy or wherever you're doing as a performer, you got to perform physically in front of people. And that's the difference. I'm not going to know the facts about an influencer, because I don't even know who they really are in the physical world. I'm being broadcast through my phone, this person. Who are you to tell me that this certain type of broccoli is going to have me erect for 9 years? It's like probably the 1849s, where all the carpet baggers and scheme artists went out to California. And so it's for me, a large part of the internet has turned into people selling me things. Reminds me of that scene in Minority Report, where Tom Cruise is walking through the mall and everybody says his name personally. Hey, going to the vacation. Hey, Tom. Not Tom, but whatever his name was.
It has catered to you personally, and your jokes are catered to the people personally. So many years in a business. How do you stay young? What's your go-to stress release?
Gee, I don't know. My back started hurting, all kind of mess. I for the most part enjoy everything. I still love what's happening on planet Earth. I delight in the natural, and I love too. That helps.
Spreading that love. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time, Mr. Davidson. I know you're coming through Hartford as part of your tour. Looking forward to that stop. I'm probably going out there and catch you live.
Thank you. And don't forget about my my single, You Show Me. Mm-hmm. Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your music. And it's something that I think is really good and a hell of a groove, too.
Thank you, Tommy Davidson, for your time. I'm Jose Candelario, and this has been the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. And like always, thank you for your listen.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.